tunes from Stevie Wonder, courtesy of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, taking us to higher ground. 90s always welcome around here. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline as we welcome you back to Sports Talk. We hit the middle of June during a 2020 no one's ever going to forget. Let's bring in the editor-in-chief of GoDucks.com. You can follow on Twitter for football. It's at DuckFootball. For other Duck teams, GoDucks Mosley. Rob Mosley checks in. Rob, how are you and yours hanging in during these unprecedented times?
Taking it day by day. I do appreciate that bumper music. I was a big fan of that that cover of Higher Ground. But I must say, the older I get, the more I appreciate Stevie's original version too. So that's one where there's no wrong answer to was the cover version better than the original, because they're both phenomenal.
Well, preaching to the choir as a child of the 70s and somebody who worked in music radio in the 90s, it's a double up Tannen Alley. So it's been 17 days since the murder of George Floyd. On the last day of May, Oregon's coach Mario Cristobal marched in a protest here in town. And as you know, many know, he's a first-generation Cuban-American escaping, his family escaped the Castro regime. And we've seen many in his position speak up, some being maybe more protective. What did it mean as somebody who works in the athletic department, from the players you've heard, to see him use his voice like that?
It was really impressive because, you know, as someone who kind of deals in the communications, and since I've switched over from the newspaper business, more kind of the public relations angle of things, you know, you start to question, how is this going to be perceived? Is this going to be taken the right way? What kind of a spotlight is he bringing on himself? You know, because not many people had spoken out at that point. And he was pretty adamant that he wanted to make a statement. And we saw, particularly the following Monday, just a cavalcade of statements come out from professional and college franchises. And so, you know, I didn't necessarily foresee Coach Cristobal being, you know, at the vanguard of that, when he was pretty insistent he wanted to put out a statement, but he just ended up looking so prescient at the moment. And I think, you know, ahead of the curve, and, you know, coming out saying something that because he really meant it and not because there was any sort of peer pressure or because it had become a kind of a trendy thing to do, for lack of a better term. That's a really poor choice of words there, but, you know, he was on the vanguard, and it was really impressive to see him take that first step.
You know, I saw you also retweeted a story about Javon Holland, who's not a guy who you would think of as chirping a lot. I mean, he's got an incredible game. You know, he's a preseason All-American. That kind of does his talking. But now he's using his voice, calling for the university to rename Dede Hall, who is, you know, for those not aware, was named for a pro-slavery Oregon delegate. So safe to say that we're going to be hearing more and more from players who use this platform, and, you know, now Holland willing to speak up like that.
Yeah, I think nationally there's an appreciation that there's validity to what these guys have to say, and that one thing it's been so nice to see is the kind of a whole shut up and dribble narrative is getting turned on its head. You know, so whereas somebody in my position might go to a group of student athletes as freshmen and say, hey, this stuff, you know, speaking your mind isn't always appreciated, so just keep in mind that, you know, you have every right to express yourself how you want and use your platforms however you see fit. But, you know, just be careful that there's some fans and teams that you might want to play for in the future who might think differently, and that's something to keep in mind. Just from a but from a practical point of view, that's a reality, and I think that's just being completely turned on its head. And there, you know, there are still some shut up and dribble people out there, but they're the minority now, and that's a good thing. You know, the fun thing about college athletes, you know, college kids in general, is just how engaged they are, and how you know, at that time in your life, how much of a sense you have for, you know, your ability to try to have an impact on the world, and you're energized and you're motivated. You're getting yourself educated. You're learning new things, and you're forming opinions and wanting to voice those opinions and kind of direct conversations in certain ways. And so it's cool to see that all that energy appreciated rather than considered, you know, a potential distraction or something like that. And yeah, guys like Javon, you know, he's not just a robot with the school colors on his uniform. You know, he's a really thoughtful guy, and you know, him and Verone McKinley, those two are really tight, and Verone's another guy, just super sharp, and who I've really enjoyed listening to and hearing from via social media these last couple of months, and I've been really proud of all those guys. And then student-athletes in other sports, too, have tried to lead conversations, too, internally. We've had a lot of conversations among staff, between student-athletes and staff, and it's been really eye-opening, and I've appreciated hearing from a lot of kids across different teams. So it's been an enlightening time, that's for sure.
Yeah, I find it very uplifting. Talking with Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. So we heard the governor last week, kind of some green lights, moving phase two, including Lane County. We've seen reports, not a lot of specifics. I mean, have you heard a plan as far as here at the U of O campus when some student-athletes might be returning? Is there a timeline? Is it gradual? I mean, what are you hearing?
It's definitely going to be gradual. It's definitely going to be pretty conservative because you just don't want to risk putting any student-athletes at risk, you know, staff at risk, eventually fans at risk once games start to happen. So you're not going to see every team show up. You're not going to see every member of teams show up all at once. You know, as the governor announced a bit ago, she's clearing the way for Oregon and for Oregon State to be able to resume voluntary workouts in the middle of this month. And so what that means practically is, as of Monday, you'll start to see some facilities become available that haven't been available. We've basically been in a campus-wide shutdown since the governor's order came down in mid-March, and the whole spring term went online. So as of Monday, you know, that's going to start to ease up a little bit in terms of strength and conditioning facilities. Our medical facilities have always been available for kids that have been in town and needed any treatment, but there'll be a few more kids able to take advantage of that. It's, you know, it's not going to be every student athlete, it's not going to be every team, it's not going to be every staff member, but we're going to start to see a little bit of activity on Monday. And you know, anybody who's traveling here from out of town is going to have been asked to monitor symptoms before they leave for Eugene, and then to isolate for a few days once they get to Eugene before they come into the facilities, just in case they had any exposure to the virus before getting here. And then there's just a ton of work that's been done by committees of doctors and facilities people and our senior staff to lay out a bunch of protocols for, you know, movement through buildings. Obviously, the use of masks wherever and whenever possible, you know, limiting the size of groups when you're in workouts. And I think it's important to remember, you know, we're in a situation now where it's voluntary workouts. So, you know, I think people have become accustomed over the past few years to that pretty much to mean everybody, particularly as it relates to football. And so eventually I think you'd expect to see the bulk of the team here and engaged in that somehow. But, you know, it's not going to be everybody on the first day, and it is going to be small groups. And it isn't mandatory in case anybody, you know, so if somebody has some concerns or their family has concerns and wants to hold off a little bit, I mean, that's absolutely part of the discussion, and that's an available option too. So like everything else going on right now, it's not going to look like normal, but as of Monday, we'll start to see a little bit more activity.
I can't wait till the day comes when I can break down a depth chart and compare schemes again.
I hear you. You know, no, it's funny. You know, I think for our, you know, even, you know, our staff, you know, you have coaches that start to get a little media weary after a while. They want to get back to that, you know. It's like they miss all those interviews that before, you know, some of them might have been kind of a pain. They miss doing that stuff. They can't wait to get back to that stuff too. So, yeah, you're not alone.
You know, I mentioned Holland earlier, and today he, Penei Sewell, and Kayvon Thibodeau made this preseason first-team All-American team. And Thibodeau in particular, I mean, as a freshman, you could see there were moments. By the end of the year, I thought he was just a terror. I mean, you see him up close and personal. What did you notice about his development during the course of his freshman year and, you know, what these next two seasons could be?
It was just... What was so impressive about K Kayvon Thibodeau as a freshman was just how progressive his development was. And just week by week, he seemed to get better. You know, so after Gus Cumberlander unfortunately got hurt a few weeks into the season, you know, Kayvon had been playing as a backup and getting a few snaps here and there, and maybe shining, like, you know, in the fourth quarter, late in the game, kind of a mop-up role, for lack of a better term. And then Gus Cumberlander gets hurt. Now some more reps are thrown his way, and he's got more responsibility, and he stepped up and assumed that. And then by the end of the year, I mean, he was just unblockable by the postseason, by the conference championship game and by the Rose Bowl. So he just kept getting better and better and better. And obviously the pressure now is, you know, to keep showing that kind of progress, because, you know, with his performances against Utah and against Wisconsin, he got everybody's attention nationwide. And so, you know, now the expectation is he keeps building on that and keeps developing. And, you know, he's a pretty high character dude. You know, I don't doubt his devotion to wanting to keep improving on a personal level. And this Joe Salve, you know, and Andy Avalos, you know, the guys who kind of coach him in that hybrid edge role, defensive line slash outside linebacker type role he's in, the stud linebacker. You know, he's got a couple pretty good guys to learn from too. So it's pretty exciting. It was cool to see the recognition for Javon Holland too, because he, you know, he plays that nickel spot, so he's kind of a tweener. You know, a little bit in how he's used schematically. So, you know, the potential there is you can be appreciated for your versatility, but you can also maybe get overlooked by somebody who is like a pure corner, like a pure safety. But he can really do everything back there. It's cool to see the appreciation for just how good he is, too, that he's not getting overlooked. And obviously, Panay, you know, when you win the Outland Trophy, everybody knows how good you are. And so that one wasn't a surprise, and it was much deserved.
You've always been real tight with the women's basketball program, going back to your days as a beat writer. And, of course, you know, you lose three top eight WNBA picks. Mignon Moore was terrific. And then you start thinking, well, what's next season look like? Well, you add five stars. This Taylor Mike Sell just looks like a sniper. You know, there's the younger Sabali, hopefully healthy, Sedona Prince. And I'm not saying you just lock this program in as a Final Four threat, but how impressive to keep this kind of momentum going.
Yeah, I mean, that recruiting class is just bananas. and you know, I guess when this staff was able to attract the quality of class it did, you know, with Ruthie and Sabrina, with very little to sell as far as where the program was going, because they'd just taken over, you know, you'd think that once you've had some success, you could get some blue chippers as well. But you know, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to do it. But then to identify some places too where some transfers could help you and get some experience, some veterans, so you don't have to lean too hard on those newcomers is great. And just, yeah, the Niara and Sedona, I'm so excited to watch them. You know, they're really close friends. The dynamic between them personally is really, really cool and fun. They're both outgoing. They both got a little bit of a goofy side. And then just physically, just so imposing with what they can do. I mean, Sedona's probably going to dunk in a game, and that's nice. Just, you know, it's so hard to fathom. You know, if you just think about just where women's college basketball was at, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You know, there was maybe a couple players in the whole nation that could think about that. And now there's going to be one in Oregon that you know, if she gets a chance on a fast break, could maybe throw down. So. So I'm really excited to see what they can do come November, December.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Couple final thoughts for Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. As a big MLB fan, you know, we see the pieces put into place maybe by NHL, NBA, soccer. Now with, it looks like the Hatfields and the McCoys with the owners and the union.
Yeah.
I mean, you got people dying from this virus, out of work. I'm more with the union, but maybe a little bit tone deaf and viewing these first world problems as, you know, unmanageable and really walking a dangerous line with fans here. Any logic to that?
All I got to say is this. I got some vacation coming up in the next couple weeks. And if there's not baseball to talk about and think about and read about while I'm on my vacation, that's when I'm really going to start getting testy. So hopefully there, you know, we're talking about training camps and things as we get here to the latter part of June. I got to think they can, you know, they can pivot quickly. But yeah, I just, it's, I'm a seam head at heart. That's my first love as a professional sport. And it's just, you know, I got fantasy teams that have been drafted. I'm having to play those games on PlayStation instead of in real life. I'm ready to watch them play, so hopefully they get over that.
All right, and lastly, we know a decade ago, USC got sanctioned over Reggie Bush, O.J. Mayo, some improper benefits. They made Reggie Bush give his Heisman back, and he wasn't allowed near Troy. There have been guys accused and guilty of way worse acts. So from your chair, did this entire circumstance reek of just how inconsistent the NCAA might be in doling out punishment? Well, what's your read on all this? It just seems really just out there.
Yeah, well, you know, when you think of, when you reflect back on the circumstances of those times, I mean, it was just so incredibly testy. And you know, you talk about the Hatfields and the Coys with the baseball situation. It kind of felt like that a little bit. And you get egos on each side, and nobody wanting to back down. And you know, you have ridiculous circumstances that evolve from stuff like that. And, you know, we're all guilty of putting ourselves in situations like that from time to time. But, you know, that's why we're not watching baseball right now to some extent. Not that there's not practical reasons behind it. And then, yeah, particularly, you know, Reggie Bush having to disassociate himself, you know, and USC having to disassociate, disavow any relationship between the two going forward, was just, in hindsight, just feels so extreme. So, yeah, I mean, it's cool to see that come to an end because, I mean, he's just as a player, you know, I spend a lot of time around college football players. College football players love them some Reggie Bush. So there's no denying, you know, the impact he had and the role model he has for a lot of guys. So, he shouldn't miss out on chances to be celebrated and appreciated and respected for the talent that he was, because he was just a phenomenon back then.
Nope. I always say I've been watching this game for 50 years, and I could actually say he might be the best I ever saw. It's most electrifying,
yeah,
for sure. Folks, he's Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com, on Twitter, at GoDucksMosley, at DuckFootball. Rob, always appreciate your time, your insight. Hang in there. Glad you're doing well. And like I said, I can't wait to break down some actual games and box scores, but we greatly appreciate you finding some time for us today.
Anytime, my friend, anytime, and you stay well, and hopefully we'll see you in a press box somewhere soon.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one.
All right, you too.